This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll be reading today, again, from a great book called A Field, Portraits of Wisconsin Naturalists Empowering Leopold's Legacy, Volume 1, by Sumner Madison. I'll be reading in my next few programs about Increase Lapham, an astounding person. I guarantee you will love learning about his life. As Sumner writes in the first paragraph of Chapter 1, apart from Native Americans who were the first to know Wisconsin's natural history, there was one who many argue was Wisconsin's premier naturalist, Increase Allen Lapham, the first to promote the state's natural history well beyond the state's borders. Wiry, quiet, unassuming, this self-trained scholar possessed an inexhaustible passion to understand and catalog the natural world. But before I really get going, I want to tell you more about the author, Sumner Madison. The book is called A Field, and that's spelled A-F-I-E-L-D. It was written and compiled over decades, much of it in the form of interviews with scientists about their lives. It's filled with great stories and insights, and I'll read the foreword by Kurt Meine. I have read chapters from this book in the past. You can find these archived in the WDRT Archived Podcasts. They date back to some of my first programs in early 2022. Sumner Madison, and that's spelled S-U-M-N-E-R-M-A-T-T-E-S-O-N, is an avian ecologist and works for the Endangered Resources Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He conducts and coordinates population surveys and management of endangered and threatened colonial waterbirds and shorebirds. And if you love seeing and hearing trumpeter swans in our wetlands like I do, we have Sumner to thank, along with many others, for the successful reintroduction of this beautiful bird back to Wisconsin. He's the director of the Wisconsin Trumpeter Swan Recovery Program. He helps direct the Wisconsin Stopover Initiative. Someday I will do a program on the importance of stopover sites for migrating birds to rest and replenish their reserves for continuing their migration. All this work that Sumner does is, among many other things, too long to list. There are so many fine people who devote their lives to increasing biodiversity in Wisconsin, which in turn enrich our lives. So many are unheralded. That's one of my motivations to read each Tuesday. So many to thank. As a young ecologist, Sumner realized that we have here in this state some of the premier wildlife biologists, botanists, naturalists, and so he started looking them up and interviewing and recording them. Much of the 18 chapters in the book are interviews in the person's own words with thoughtful introductions by Madison. What foresight he had to do this. The foreword is called Gathering of the Voices by Kurt Meine, Ph.D., conservation biologist, historian, and writer. Historians and linguists have long debated the meaning of the word Wisconsin. The river gave the state its name. Who gave the river its native name? What did it mean to them? We may never know definitely, but the original meaning most in favor lately is among the oldest recorded and the most poetic, gathering of the waters. In this volume, Sumner Madison provides a gathering of voices of and from Wisconsin. Here we meet the observant students and caretakers of our waters and soils, fish and flowers, trees and birds, critters and crawlers. Like Wisconsin's waters, the voices of these notable naturalists have mingled over time and helped to define the state. Over the generations, they helped make Wisconsin synonymous with environmental stewardship. Wisconsin became known far beyond its borders for its conservation tradition and culture of care. But just as we are prone to take our waters for granted, so can we easily neglect the voices of our elders. Although voices inevitably fade and are forgotten, culture has always worked to counter that loss and to conserve human experience in story. Now, however, our collective memory can be overwhelmed by our collective distraction, by our all-absorbing fixation on the news feed, the tweet storm, the live stream. All the more reason to value this gathering of voices. For 40 years, Sumner has regularly made time to record the stories of Wisconsin field biologists, ecologists, conservation biologists, and land stewards. Among them are the well-known and recognized, as well as the more obscure and overlooked. All made vital contributions to natural history and conservation in Wisconsin. Some were scientists and teachers, others were writers and advocates, public servants and citizens. All in some way were wisdom keepers. Their lives span a century and a half, and many never met, yet they are connected across their diverse places and times and experiences. They share a passion for what Aldo Leopold called things natural, wild, and free. They carried the same conviction that we are bonded to the land and all its inhabitants and to one another upon it. Sumner's perseverance in gathering their voices has only increased the value of his work. In fact, we need these voices and stories now more than ever. We need them to remind us that we belong to an ever-evolving community of people who built the fund of knowledge, commitment, and vision that we draw upon daily, if mostly unconsciously. We need them to serve as antidotes to frustration as our conservation leadership has eroded, our land ethic has been challenged, and our civic life has fragmented. We need them to ground us as we face a future of rapidly changing social, economic, and environmental realities, most especially the uncertain effects of accelerating climate change. We need them to encourage us all to assume our responsibilities, defend the public good, and value our shared natural assets for future generations and all our fellow creatures on the land. We need them more than anything to nurture the next generation of citizen conservationists. These stories also bear witness to an old truth. Wisconsin's tradition of natural history and conservation commitment has always depended not on a few individuals, even those remembered here. Leadership has always relied on the actions of curious, creative, committed citizens. True conservation leadership has always resided in those who love the land and who work to solve problems, meet needs, and seize opportunities. It expresses itself through all who know that the health of our lands, waters, wildlife, communities, and economies depend on people working together to understand the workings of the land and to make constructive change happen. Every voice in this volume reminds us of this. Listen. Our elders speak to us in varied tones. They are informed, emotional, experienced, funny, rough, inspiring, bold, quiet, wise, and adventurous. Through their stories and their many ways of telling them, we can again connect our knowledge and our spirit. We can again demonstrate our respect for one another and our love for the landscape of Wisconsin. And that's Kurt Meine's foreword to the book A Field. And now chapter 1, Increase Lapham. Apart from Native Americans who were the first to know Wisconsin's natural history, there was one who many argue was Wisconsin's premier naturalist, Increase Allen Lapham, the first to promote the state's natural history well beyond the state's borders. Wiry, quiet, and unassuming, this self-trained scholar possessed an inexhaustible passion to understand and catalog the natural world. Today, Increase Lapham is widely recognized as Wisconsin's most accomplished pioneering naturalist, working at a time preceding and following statehood and initiating investigations into the state's botany, geology, topography, geography, ichthyology, meteorology, history, forestry, and archaeology. The Smithsonian Institution published his work on effigy mounds in 1855, the highly acclaimed The Antiquities of Wisconsin. Wisconsinites had never seen anything quite like him. An increased Lapham left an indelible impression on those who encountered him. One day while traveling in an open wagon with a group of reporters to inspect the planned route of a southeastern Wisconsin railway line, he asked the driver to stop and stop again so that he could walk into the field to pick a flower or another plant or collect a stone. One reporter described Lapham's effect this way. No sooner had we fairly started than little was his mind occupied with the questions of the railway. If he secured something rare and new, his face and manner seemed to express the joy of a child in chasing a butterfly, and so we traveled for 30 or 40 miles. The journey was slow but interesting, and the more we saw of his guileless and childlike life, the more profound was our admiration for the character of the man who seemed to rise above the dross of this world and soar constantly in the realms of science, unquote. His seminal work on Wisconsin forests, Report of the Disastrous Effects of the Destruction of Forest Trees, now going on so rapidly in the state of Wisconsin, warned of the dangers of resource overexploitation, and he became known as a father of forest conservation for his advocacy of scientific management. Of equal importance was his concern for the effects of weather on farmers and the Great Lakes shipping trade. He became immersed in the study of weather, and in 1870 helped establish a national storm warning system, which was to evolve into the National Weather Service. Born March 7, 1811, in Palmyra, New York, to Quaker parents and the fifth of 13 children, Increase, named after Increase Allen, his grandfather on his mother's side, originally came to Wisconsin at age 25 as a self-trained Ohio canal engineer. He was invited by a fellow Ohio canal worker, Byron Kilbourne, to join an engineering crew to help build a canal from Milwaukee west into Wisconsin's lead region. Increase learned canal work under his father, Seneca, a contractor on the Erie Canal, and from his brother, Darius, an assistant engineer. The Milwaukee Rock River Canal never materialized when railroad transportation took root, but Lapham chose to remain in Milwaukee with his new bride, Anne Marie Alcott. For the next nearly 40 years, as Milwaukee grew from a frontier village to a prosperous city, Increase went to great lengths to explore the countryside and document the area's natural history, publishing as early as 1836 the Wisconsin Territory's first scientific treatise, a catalog of plants and shells found in the vicinity of Milwaukee. 8 years later, he finished Milwaukee's first commercially published book, A Geographical and Topographical Description of Wisconsin, which informed new immigrants eager to learn more about their chosen area of settlement. A second edition in 1846 included his first published detailed map of the Wisconsin Territory. In an unpublished autobiography, Increase told how he first became intrigued by the natural world in Lockport, New York, where his father was working on the locks for the Erie Canal. "I earned some money by cutting stone to be used in the locks. Soon after this, I was employed in the engineer service in the capacity of rodman for my brother Darius Lapham, who had already achieved the position of assistant engineer. The beautiful mineral specimens I found in the deep-cut rock at Lockport gave me my first ideas of mineralogy and initiated a habit of observation that has continued through all my life. I found amusement and pastime in the study of nature, leading to long walks in the country, and as I found no others of similar tastes, these rambles were usually without companions." Unquote. learning through his habit of observation proved rewarding. Quote, "The satisfaction of being able to learn some new thing is a sufficient return for the extra effort. Knowledge is power, says the proverb. It is at any rate a pleasure," unquote. Though self-deprecating to a fault increases observation acumen led to his becoming an accomplished botanist, he estimated his botanical collection of specimens to be about 8,000 species at its peak, and he donated more than 1,000 plant specimens to the newly established University of Wisconsin Botany Department. He also filled requests for specimens from botanists overseas and from nationally known scientists such as Harvard University botanist Asa Gray and naturalist Louis Agassiz. Increase was also very involved with community and regional affairs, lecturing about science to high school students meeting at the Unitarian Church and to fellow members of the Milwaukee Lyceum, of which he was a founder. He served as the first secretary of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters and helped found the groundbreaking Milwaukee Female College and what is today the Wisconsin Historical Society, where he served as president for 10 years. Lapham's noteworthy contributions are presented in elegant detail in the Lapham biography Studying Wisconsin by Martha Berglund and Paul Hayes, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press in 2014. But it is his impressions of Wisconsin's landscapes as well as his thoughts and feelings on early Wisconsin life that intrigue me most. These are typically conveyed through family letters, personal journals, and public writings, all wonderfully accessible through the Wisconsin Historical Society. In the pages that follow, I attempt to shed light on these subjects, largely through correspondence Increase had with his older brother Darius, with whom Increase held a special bond and exhibited a sharp but playful sense of humor, and with wife Anne Marie, to whom he turned more and more after Darius's death by cholera in 1850 at age 42. He was only 3 years older than Increase. It should be noted here that Increase's daughter Julia painstakingly edited and typed hundreds of pages of his correspondence, again all housed in the Wisconsin Historical Society. These are the source for much of the material that follows. I start, however, with the reflections of naturalist and friend Philo R. Hoy, who knew him for nearly 30 years and who paid tribute to him in The Transactions of the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. After Lapham's death on September 14, 1875, his piece was titled Increase A. Lapham, LLD. And this is Hoy. "My first acquaintance with Dr. Lapham was in 1846 when one morning there landed from the steamer Sultana a small man with a huge collecting box hanging at his side. He came from Milwaukee and intended returning on foot along the lakeshore in order to collect plants and shells. No easy journey, encumbered as he soon would be, with a well-filled specimen box. He spoke lightly of the undertaking, saying he had performed similar feats before. In after years, we were often together studying the mounds, quarries, forest trees, and so on near Racine, and my first impressions of his energy, perseverance, enthusiasm, accuracy, and extent of information were all deepened by our subsequent meetings. He was a quiet, unassuming gentleman, benevolent, and most hospitable, as both strangers and friends can abundantly testify. He had not the advantages of commanding presence, and was not gifted in public speaking, and being modest to a fault, always inclined to underrate his own abilities and labors. He often did not receive that recognition which his knowledge demanded, but he soon became the authority on all scientific subjects and was often appealed to from city, state, and country for information which he alone could furnish." And Hoy continues, "No one could doubt his industry who saw his large, valuable, and well-used library and his extensive and systematically arranged collection of minerals, fossils, shells, and antiquities, or who examined his herbarium of 3,000 specimens, the finest in the Northwest, and then remembered in connection with all that his work in other directions. His idea of rest was characteristically shown by his once cataloging my hundreds of insects for future use in some publication at a time when he visited me under his physician's orders to take a needed rest and abstain from business. Lapham never had the advantages of a college education, but was not the book of nature ever open to impart instruction to this student who knew how to read its pages with delight and profit? To know Dr. Lapham, we must go with him to his workshop, the great outdoors. We stroll out on the prairies. He pulls up the grass and discourses familiarly of the spikes and spikelets, the rachis and gloom, inspects the roots, digs down and examines the soil from which they spring. His tongue is unloosed and he becomes eloquent in spite of himself. We go into the forest. He talks of the various species of trees, the vines that clamber up their trunks and nestle in their branches. He inspects the lichens that grow on the rough bark, examines the moss that adheres to the roots, and unearths a tiny helix that has found a home there. We go to the rapids, and he immediately interests himself in the rare ferns that festoon the rocks with their graceful fronds, or clambers among the quarries, marks the stratification of the Silurian rocks, and chips out rare forms of crinoids and trilobites, those wonderful representations of the ocean fauna of the dim past. He talks of the force of the winds and their velocity and direction, and then looks up at the clouds and tells their indication, and speaks of the annual rainfall and of the average temperature of the seasons for the last 30 years, during which time he had kept a faithful record of these phenomena. And that's the end of the beginning of the chapter on Increase Lapham. And I will stop there, and next week we will delve further into the life and the work of Increase Lapham. This is Maggie Jones in Natural Wonders. Thanks for listening.